It's a Friday morning, and that means it's time for Ben Fred Fridays here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Ben of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLToday.com. If you are new to the website, we are always visiting with Ben on Friday mornings, and it's brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, protecting your rights, defending your freedom. They're available 24/7, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400, STLCriminalDefense.com. That is their website, and Henderson Watercutty is a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. That means state, federal, municipal courts, the most commonly asked questions can be found at their website. All you got to do is literally hit the button and it answers your question about what you have. Traffic violations, the more serious violations are on there as well. And they've gotten just terrific response out of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, so much so that they will be an exclusive sponsor of our postseason coverage of St. Louis Cardinals baseball, which will begin on Monday. Ben, how are we? Are you ready to go?
Is that a long-winded way of saying that that I'm still going to be doing these on Friday, that I've got an extension here?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk to the guys at Henderson and Watercutty, I mean, you better hold up your end of the bargain, buddy. Okay,
all right, I'm in postseason form. I'm ready.
Well, let's hope the Cardinals are too. It's still not settled going into this weekend series with the Chicago Cubs. Let's go back to last weekend, though. We haven't had a chance to really talk about it, and then how it pertains to maybe this weekend. But a four-game sweep against the Cubs, one of the best regular season, I think, series in Cardinals history. Now, historically, it says that too, with one-run games, how they came back at the end. They hadn't swept the Cubs in a four-game series at Wrigley since 1921. So all that is kind of the backdrop going into this ball game tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Chicago series was, you know, I remember, I guess the closest thing I compare it to is 2015. And I remember, you know, we were there in Chicago in 2015 when the Cardinals got knocked from the postseason by the Cubs. And going into that cramped old, you know, visitors clubhouse, you felt like something had tilted, like there had been a reversal of the rivalry, and the Cardinals were no longer on top of it. And this felt like, this sweep in Chicago felt like it was flipped back in the Cardinals' direction. And I know it wasn't in the postseason, and it didn't even eliminate the Cubs, although they are now eliminated. It certainly pushed them to the nearest edge of the plank. It felt like the Cardinals grabbing hold of this rivalry again. And in the years past, we used to say grabbing hold of this division. Well, it's not that way anymore because we, for whatever reasons, continue to kind of count out the Brewers, and they're proving us wrong for doing that again. But the Cardinals-Cubs is such a big deal that we're always taking stock of it. We're always measuring it. And that sweep felt like not just the Cardinals grabbing the upper hand, but really a mirror held up to the Cubs, because the way folks are talking there, this is not going to be the same Cubs team that we see next season. You know, there's tons of speculation about what this looks like for Joe Maddon and if he'll be back. It certainly seems like the front office there has put him on the hot seat and really kind of pointed the finger at him more and more as the season went along. There's going to be some significant probably departures from that team. And while it doesn't sound like Theo has any interest in going back to Boston, there will be probably some shakeup in Chicago, but they would love nothing more than to start this off season of searching by sticking a harpoon in the Cardinals to drag them down to be a wild card team. They will be motivated to do just that. They are still a competitive team. I mean, you look at how Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez played heroically in that series. They're going to want to come here and make sure the Cardinals are not winning the division. They would much rather have the Brewers do that than the Cards.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that I know, because they tweeted at me or talked to me, but they were frustrated with that lineup the other day in Game 3 against Arizona. And my counter to that would be, well, you weren't there. It was nearly 7 hours of baseball that ended at, you know, 2 in the morning. Those guys got to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning, and then you had a day game. I had no problem with it. I understand the thought process with, hey, you only got a handful of games. You got to win. You put your best lineup out there. Your best lineup may have been guys that were somewhat fresh. I don't think it would have been a good move for Mike Shildt to play his everyday lineup because of the lack of freshness and an exhausted club. I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that clubhouse after that loss, game two. So I don't know, Ben, I don't know where you're at with this, but I was okay with that lineup.
It's one of those things to me that if it works, then you're a genius, and if it doesn't, then people are going to question it. And that's baseball, right? And Schilt said that after the game. He said, I know people are going to pick at this, and some people are, and it's fair. I mean, could he have found ways to get those guys in off the bench sooner, perhaps? I mean, Paul Goldschmidt gets one at bat, and the other guys get none. But, you know, the problem, Dan, the more I look at it, it wasn't scoring runs. They scored 7 runs. There's times this regular lineup goes out there and can't score 7 runs, so the offense, to me, wasn't the problem. It wasn't exactly like the defense was the problem. I thought this was a sign of the Cardinals. You know, we talked a lot at the trade deadline about what do they need to do, what's the one thing they have to do, and we talked a lot about pitching, specifically starting pitching. And this was a game where if you could have a starting pitcher go out there and shove, that wins you this game. It wasn't runs. It was, you know, your bullpen was depleted. It had to pitch a ton of innings in the marathon game. Your lineup was tired, and you tried to get those guys off their feet for a little bit. I mean, you really needed a starter to go out there and shove. And I'm not putting it on Michael Walker. He's not. He wasn't healthy. He exited. He was hurt. He has pitched at times, you know, really well since the trade deadline. But if you look at the starts that he's had, that fifth spot has had since the trade deadline, those are all risky games for the Cardinals. And for the most part, I think they've kind of dodged it and wiggled around it. They've done it by limiting that number of starts. They've done it by really having some strong bullpen performances in his games. And they've done it by getting good performances from the other starters that have helped the bullpen kind of back up that fifth spot. So it didn't turn out as poorly as it could have. But goodness, in that game, in that moment, where it would have been so nice to have a starter go out there and carry the load, it's reminded what the Cardinals left on the table at the trade deadline. Now, they won't have to worry about that in the postseason. You don't have to have a fifth starter. But if you go into the postseason as a wild card versus as a division champ, then I do think it's a fair point to bring up.
Well, it may have been the last time we see Michael Walker pitch for the Cardinals. Yep. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're probably right, and I think you know, it's been pretty clear what the plan was for him this season. There's usually talk of some sort of an extension or an agreement being worked out before it happens in this case, and there hasn't been any on the Cardinals' part. And I think, if anything, how this has ended for him has been a reminder of kind of just the story of Michael Walker. I mean, you're going to get good starts from him at times. You're going to think, is this the year? And then it just seems like as the workload mounts and the innings pile up late in seasons, things start to fall apart. I don't know what his future is. I don't know if a transition to the bullpen could work for him. But you get the sense, Dan, that the Cardinals are ready to turn the page there. And we'll see what happens. But hard to think that he's a part of this postseason roster with the injury issue now. And probably, you know, have to look at what his future looks like elsewhere. I think it's a complicated legacy for Michael Walker because it was so good and so bright to start, and there have been good points in it, but probably nothing ever lived up to that first kind of introduction to him, and you kind of felt like he was pitching beneath those expectations the rest of his career.
Yeah, probably so. Won the NLCS MVP in 2013, and we'll see what lies ahead for Michael Walker. This, again, is brought to you by STLCriminalDefense.com, the good folks at Henderson and Watercutty, as we visit with Ben Fred. Ben, I want to talk a little bit about the manager of the year. Now, we've touched upon this before, but to me, it comes down to this weekend. If somehow the Brewers and Craig Counsell get in as the champions of the Central, it's got to go to Craig Counsell with the way that they finish. Still might, by the way that he's finished up, but boy, oh boy, you got to look at Mike Schilt, I think, in the job that he's done and the way that he's turned this thing around here in the second half.
Yeah, I was looking at some of this this week, and it's really interesting. You know, Snitker is deserving, but he won it last year, so I think they're probably less likely to give it to him again. And then you got Dave Roberts, who's deserving, but if that goes into that expected expected pool, right? Like, you usually give it to the guy that's expected to be the best, you know, the folks who vote on this. So I think you're looking at a really compelling discussion in the Central right now. And you raise a good point. I mean, if the Brewers win, then Council has to get it. I mean, what they have done since Christian Yelich was taken out of the equation has been remarkable. I don't care who it's been against. This is a team that lost its best player and said, okay, we're going to go win this for him. And I thought it would rally. I thought it would fizzle out, you know, after a few games, after a few series, but it hasn't. And you know, he is pressing the right buttons, pressing a lot of buttons, but a lot of the right buttons. I think if they win, it has to go to him. And I'm okay saying that if the Cardinals win this division, I think there is a lot of evidence that says Mike Schilt is more than deserving.
Absolutely.
It's not just that they won the most competitive division in baseball. It's that they're going to become the first team to do it while going from last to first in terms of errors committed. You know, they were error-prone last season more than any other team, and this year they have the fewest. A lot of that's Paul Goldschmidt, but a lot of it's the defensive, you know, details that he has maximized. If you look at their base running and how improved that has been, that's gone from a weakness to a strength. And you look at it also in the moves that he's made on a team that really kind of across the board has got a lot of guys who have not performed up to their career norms. You know, you've done it with down years for Paul Goldschmidt in terms of what he normally provides, and there have been some other guys. He lost a closer, found another. And then look what he's got back from returning guys who've bounced back. Like Colton Wong has had his career best season this year under Schilt. Dexter Fowler went from being a player that we were questioning if it was the end of his career, performance-wise, to back to lead off and you know, being a true leader producing for this team. So I think you can make a really compelling case that Schilt is your guy if the Cardinals finish it out. It's going to be hard for him to win it if the Cardinals don't win the division.
Who would be your MVP on the Cardinals team? There's a lot of different guys, but who would you go with?
Yeah, that's a good question. Probably I would have maybe, you know, leaned toward toward Colton. He's hurt now, so that, you know, that's kind of been the bugaboo for him, is his ability to stay healthy. I think you could, you know, it sounds a little crazy to throw this out there, but Paul Goldschmidt is going to lead this team in home runs and RBIs, and he's completely transformed the way that they play defense in the infield. I don't think it gets enough credit, the fact that the pitchers have gotten better. You know, the ground ball pitchers are more confident now because he's there. Colton Wong is going to win a gold glove in part because he's there and it can play that much more confidently. And I think, you know, we obsess over his offense, but you look at, some of the difference making that he has done, then I think you have to, you know, look at that conversation. I would probably say, Colton Wong, unless I'm going to go Jack Flaherty. I think Flaherty emerging as kind of the ace of this group has been something that was needed, and it's been impressive, and it doesn't really show any sign of letting up anytime soon. So those are pretty good names there. I probably would have gone Wong just because he kind of represents what the team is right now. Great defense, great base running, and finding ways to make it happen on offense. But his injury has opened up the door a little bit.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients. And this is why you can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. Jack Flaherty, where would you put him in the Cy Young Award right now as we wrap up this season for the St. Louis Cardinals, regular season-wise?
I think he'll get attention. I don't think he'll win. I think he would need to finish off one of those no-hitters to really kind of force himself down people's throats as the guy. But he's been Arrieta-like in the second half. But I think he's going to be in the realm, but I don't think he'll be the guy. It's kind of where I feel. And if you look at his numbers since, it's not even since the break, people say since the break, it's really his last start before the break, which isn't that big of a difference, but when you're talking fine details, it matters. He has been outstanding, and you know, it's been one of those things where, is he going to get knocked for some of his, you know, not elite starts in the first half, and how do the voters view it? My tendency is there to think they're going to look full season, and they're also going to look for, you know, those gems. If Jack Flaherty throws a no-hitter, and I know it's asking a lot, but you feel like he's on the cusp of one every time, then somebody looks at him and says, okay, now I'm going to look at the rest of his second half. He came so close, but I think he's probably going to be receiving votes, but not the guy.
I have to look at him as being a huge reason, clearly, as to why they've gotten into the playoffs. I look at Paul Goldschmidt. I look at Colton Wong. And a lot of these reasons point to Mike Shildt and what he's done with his staff. And the fact that they stayed even keel. And we've seen that a lot of times, Ben, where certain guys, they just don't stay even keel. And by him being that way, sometimes it frustrates fans. They want to see him throw things and get mad and get upset. That's just not his style, is it?
Well, you know, he does get hot at times, but it's more of a controlled burn. And you know, I think he's a better communicator, even when he is ticked off about something. You know, him getting ticked off, it can be a good thing, but he expresses it. He talks to the right people about it. I think guys know when they're in his doghouse, but they don't have to guess. And I think there's a lot of communication that players will tell you they appreciate. You know, and he is probably, you know, probably, I know, certainly steadier than some would like when it comes to kind of the changes that he makes. But I think his players appreciate knowing where they stand and also knowing that they're not going to be in the lineup one day and out of it the next based off one thing that happened in the field that day. Even when guys aren't happy, if they're playing well, they understand why. I mean, look at, I think another thing that points to this, Dan, is the handling of Matt Carpenter. You know, Mike Shildt probably didn't swap Matt Carpenter for Tommy Edman as soon as some fans would have hoped, but I would argue that he swapped him sooner than some previous managers might have. And I would also say that the way he did it, with Matt Carpenter not liking it but understanding it, has given them a better Matt Carpenter since they had to turn back to him with Colton Wong being hurt. I think that's the thing, is Mike Shildt understands, look, we're definitely going to need Matt Carpenter at some point. So let's do this in a way that we can get the best out of him when we have to turn back to him. Matt Carpenter's a pro. He's not going to turtle up and not try to play hard. But there is a way you can handle things. And now Colton Wong's out, and they're going to turn to Carpenter and say, hey, we have confidence in you. And they've shown confidence in him. So I think, you know, there's always something, you know, always kind of a method to the madness here. And I think, too, you know, we talked about that lineup. That's one of those things where, you know, if you're going to go to certain guys and say, hey, we believe in you guys, go out and win a game, and if you have a different pitching in that game and you score 7 runs against the Diamondbacks, a team that's eliminated, then you're going into that next series with every guy who's up for grabs on the postseason roster feeling really good about the way that planned out. So when I saw that, I didn't hate it. It's you got to be careful about looking at it, you know, in hindsight. But also remember that group scored 20 runs, found a way to steal home, made some good defensive plays, hit a home run. I mean, they were not asleep at the plate up there, and I don't think the offense was the reason that game wasn't won.
Let's switch gears a little bit here. And the Blues, they make a huge deal. Edmondson out. They pick up a defenseman that they signed long term. What do you think of the deal?
Man, sneaky by Army, man, on his birthday too. He is, he's relentless, Dan, and he talked a lot about, you know, this not being a victory lap, and this isn't going to be a you know, year-long party from last year's, and this is about capitalizing on this window. And picking up Falk, it speaks truth to that. I mean, this is a deal that gets them a top four defenseman. He is a goal scoring defenseman. Most importantly, I think, is that he has scored half of his career goals on the power play. And you remember the Blues were historic in their comeback last year, and also historic in the terrible power play they overcame to win the Stanley Cup, because it was just horrendous, and they kind of had to drag it with them through the finish line there. They've made coaching changes to try to address this, and now added a player who should really help them in that department. It's going to raise questions about the plan moving forward. This is a pretty significant deal, because they, not only did they trade for him, they extended him, and now he's under contract for, you know, eight. They're going to have 8 years with him. So what does that mean for a guy like Alex Pietrangelo, who's going to be a free agent after this upcoming season, who's the captain of the first Blues team to win the Stanley Cup, and he's going to want a lot of money. Could this be a backup of sorts if Pietrangelo's free agency takes him elsewhere? I think there are a lot of people wondering about that. The other thing to do, too, is that it doesn't have to be Pietrangelo who leaves. I mean, maybe it's Shen, or maybe, you know, you take some of that money that you get from Jay Bouwmeester's expiring contract and ship it to Petro. I don't think it necessarily means that one has to be gone, but it does. It does probably look like, and is probably right to be viewed as, some insurance in case that does happen. Now, the other thing, the immediate question was the salary cap, and it sounds like, based off Armstrong's comments, that they got Carolina to take on enough of the percentage of Falk's salary that it's not going to be that big of a deal. They can also play with 22 or 21 guys on the roster. So immediately the questions were about the salary cap, and it sounds like, because of Army's shrewd dealing, that it's not going to be that big of an issue. So I think, you know, you have to see how it plays out, but it certainly looks like a deal that says, hey, we're serious about contending this year. And while Edmondson was an important part of the Cup team, I don't think he got worse as a team here. This was a move made to try to keep that championship window open.
What do you think Wednesday is going to be like? That's the first game of this long journey that is a hockey season.
Yeah, and it will be the one game, really, where I think the Blues allow themselves some wiggle room on not making it about this season. They've talked a lot about turning the page and putting it on the shelf, and it's about the now. But they'll give themselves one night to see that banner go up and to really, you know, hear from the fans what it means and what this summer has meant. And not just the summer, but this time. I mean, I think that's going to be the message, is that this was great, and, you know, it was a party like everyone expected, probably bigger than anyone expected, but it doesn't have to be over yet. It's incredibly hard to repeat as a Stanley Cup champion, but if you look at the history, a lot of teams that don't repeat win the next year. I mean, and this team's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I think that's the vibe, is that Stanley Cup run was great, but this era of Blues hockey should be even better.
Absolutely. Mizzou, off weekend, they beat up on South Carolina last weekend. What was your takeaways from that game?
Well, I thought the one thing they needed to prove was that they could respond to adversity on the field. And we knew they weren't going to have much against SEMO. And they had less than, I think, a lot of us thought against West Virginia. And this was really the first chance since Wyoming to know going into the game that something wasn't going to happen, something was going to go wrong. And were they going to snowball like they did in Wyoming, where the game got away before they could put together a response, or were they going to step over it? And what a test in that first series, where they're stalled on the goal line and immediately come up with a play to score a defensive touchdown, and that was a response, and they continued to respond. They got pressure on a quarterback who was in his first SEC road game. Kelly Bryant did not have a good start, but he played better as the game went along, and really the story of the game was the defense, Dan. They finally looked like that group that Barry Odom has wanted to have here since he transitioned from defensive coordinator to head coach. This was a game that I think said that we were not crazy for thinking Missouri could be really good this year, and the further they move away from that Wyoming, you know, head scratcher, the better off they're going to be viewed. They have the bye week, and then they have Troy. Those should be, you know, those are it's pretty easy sailing to this moment, and they have a chance still to take care of business against Kentucky and head down. They could head down to Georgia, you know, with only one loss at Wyoming. And you got to think too, if you had to pick one loss for this football team in terms of ramifications for the future, it probably would have been Wyoming, because it's first on the schedule. It's going to be viewed as old if they continue to take care of business, and it has no ramifications on their conference standing. So while it was odd and weird, if it was the wake-up call this team needed, then I think you could get to the end of the season and feel pretty good about it. The other thing to keep in mind here is that the SEC East is a joke after Georgia. It continues to be, and now it's worse. I mean, South Carolina was one of three teams in the division that Missouri will play that lost its starting quarterback for the season. Terry Wilson at Kentucky is out, and also Felipe Franks at Florida is out as well. So Missouri should be a stronger team than most it's going to face, except for Georgia. And then you just go out there and give it a Hail Mary. So, you know, they've responded. They're playing better. They're playing more complete on defense. I think they've got some good momentum now. The thing is, they can't go out and shoot themselves in the foot, because it seems like every time they build up some hype, they go out and tear it down. But if they can keep this rolling, then I don't think too many people will be talking about the Wyoming loss in a few weeks.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. Media day for St. Louis University basketball. I'll have on the website again every week will be the head coach, Travis Ford, and he's got a good team coming back. I'm not sure people realize how good this team that is coming back, but what are your impressions on, in a general sense, SLU getting back to work and trying to defend that postseason championship?
Well, I think it can be a really fun team, and with the experience that they have and Jordan Goodwin and the guys around him, Hassan French, that are returning, you know, Fred Thatch steps forward in terms of that leadership role. And then you're going to sprinkle in some new players, that, you know, Terrence Hargrove, who isn't excited about getting a chance to see him. And then, you know, Collins, the point guard, the freshman who they say sees the court like unlike any player that they've had in a long time. So there's a good mix of some veteran leadership, of some new kind of interesting pieces. And the one guy that I don't think probably is getting talked about enough, Dan, is the kid who can make the shots, Gibson Jimerson, the freshman out of Virginia. Travis told me they think he's the best pure shooter that he's ever coached. And this is important, because SLU was awful. God awful from 3-point range last season. If they just had one guy who could step out and make that shot, then they start getting some more looks inside for Hassan French. Then defenses can't pack it down low. If Gibson Jimerson, he will probably be a name that SLU fans are going to know very soon if they don't already. And if he comes onto that radar sooner, it means Salou's going to be better and better, because it means he's hitting those shots and making teams come out to defend him, which therefore creates things for his teammates. If you had to pick one guy this team was missing last season, it was a spot-up three-point shooter, and they seem to have found one.
I want to ask you, too, before I let you go, what your thoughts were on seeing what's happened with KU and some of these big programs that are in trouble, the Blue Bloods. What do you think that is going to be as far as the ripple effect around the college game, and then how it pertains to what Mizzou is going through and trying to appeal their situation with the NCAA?
Yeah, pretty different scenarios going on at Kansas and Mizzou, but one interesting kind of thing to watch between the two is the responses of each school. Kansas is caught up in this FBI investigation, this corruption in the college basketball that's really trying to take down the Adidas influence in the game. And it's unfortunate for Kansas that the FBI went after Adidas and not like Nike, because all these shoe companies do the same thing. But, you know, Kansas, when you saw that the FBI investigation was looking at Adidas, you figured Kansas was going to pop up in it in some way, shape, or form. Now, that has happened, and there's sworn testimony from court about Kansas being involved in some of this, some of this arranging of players based off of its relationship with Adidas, all the way up to the level of Bill Self. Now, Kansas's response to that has been, you know, this is bogus, we're going to fight this, and, you know, you can talk to our lawyers, and we'll drag this out and get down in the muck and fight. Now, Missouri's response to a different issue. They had an academic misconduct issue. Their response was, let's cooperate and let's open up the door and let's, try to come to a self-imposed punishment that's agreeable here. And then they got a punishment that they felt like didn't fit what they were going to be told and didn't reward them for their cooperation. So I think what you're continuing to see, Dan, is two schools of thought when it comes to programs in the NCAA. And one says cooperation, and that's the way it used to be. You know, you're better off taking your medicine willingly before it has to be injected. And the others now, and we're seeing this more and more, says they can't get what they think they have and take it to court and lawyer up and tell them to get lost and fight it out. And I think a lot of schools are responding to what happened with North Carolina, the way it handled its academic misconduct allegations, and it just fought tooth and nail and wound up winning because the NCAA at the end of the day could not stick what it wanted to them. So you're seeing two very, very distinct schools of thought there. The other thing to keep in mind here, not to ramble on, but it's coming at a very fascinating time because the NCAA is probably, you know, in terms of its public persona, is as low as it has been, and it continues to make itself look bad. And with all these stories kind of swirling around, because it's driving in a flag against this issue that's taken place in California with this Fair Pay to Play Act, where California and now other states are saying, look, we're going to make it okay for players to benefit off their name, image, and likeness. And we don't care what the NCAA says. If they're playing at one of our state schools, they can do this. And the NCAA, instead of realizing that this thing is getting out in front of it and that it's becoming the bad guy on this issue, is starting to say, well, we'll just ban events from your state and your schools won't be allowed to participate. What the NCAA is doing here, and I don't even know if it realizes it's doing it, is opening up the door for schools and states who are tired of the NCAA to come up with its own governing body, one that allows players to benefit in ways that the NCAA doesn't, one that it would just take probably a few multiple, influential schools to step outside and say, we're leaving these guys, to really take the whole system down from inside. So I think Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, is probably terrified, but his response is continue to try to, increase the divide instead of actually trying to make the NCAA wake up and get back on the right side of some of these issues.
Could you really see that, though? Another governing body?
I think it's a matter of time. I mean, because you have all kinds of things. You have student athletes who realize like what their talent is producing in terms of monetary value for their schools and for these organizations. And so they're starting to say, why can't we get a bigger piece of that pie? You're also having programs now, schools, member institutions, flat out threaten the integrity of the organization. I mean, go back and read some of Jim Stirk's comments about what he thinks could happen to the NCAA and the precedent that it could set if a school that cooperates you know, gets its hand cut off instead of a slap on the wrist. I'm paraphrasing here, but he's openly questioning, you know, the long-term viability of this plan when there are other programs that are lawyering up and fighting and winning. You know, there are a lot of people involved in the NCAA that are not exactly happy with the leadership of it. And then you see Mark Emmert's comments that make it sound like a player benefiting from a sponsorship. It would be the worst thing that ever happened to the organization. It's hilarious. I mean, he needs someone in his ear to tell him, look, you are coming out really bad on the PR side of all these things. And you have people from the NCAA who are coming out and saying, well, we can't possibly allow for sponsors to pay athletes because then they won't buy sponsorships with us. And that's the concern. So, you know, the problem here is that it's a world that was really built around protecting itself. And oftentimes that means that the rest of the world, the outside world, is really seeing things much differently than they are when they decide to look up and see what's going on around them. But if they don't see the circling of public opinion around them when it comes to some of these issues, then they need somebody inside who's doing a better job of looking up.
Yeah, it's a total joke. It's been a joke for years. Anyway, Ben, thank you so much, and we'll catch up next Friday, and we'll see if we're talking a little playoff baseball then.
Sounds good, my man. Yeah, get back home, and we'll see you here soon.
Thank you, sir. I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.